It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
It's exciting to be joining you on our third season of the Live Greatly podcast. In case you're new to the show, I'm Crystal Bauer, a wellness expert on a mission to help you thrive personally and professionally. If you're ready to thrive, I invite you to subscribe and follow season three, because each week I'm sharing conversations with incredible individuals about life, wellness, and success. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast.
This animal has to have clean water, as do we. And its extinction means the water is so polluted, they can't live in it anymore. And so when we save these other species, we're actually saving ourselves.
I'm beyond excited about today's guest, Joel Sartori. Joel is a National Geographic photographer, and in 2006, he started the National Geographic Photo Ark in an effort to document every species living in human care. He wants to inspire action through education and help save wildlife by supporting on-the-ground conservation efforts. Joel's going to share a behind-the-scenes look at some of his experiences photographing these animals in the wild and at zoos. He's also going to be talking about how you can give back and make a positive impact to help save these species. I'm so incredibly excited about this. Joel is a National Geographic explorer, a public speaker, author, educator, conservationist, and he's also a regular contributor to National Geographic magazine. So let's jump into it and welcome Joel to the show. Joel, thank you so much for taking some time with me today. I'm really, really excited to have you here.
You are welcome. Good to be here.
So to start, I would love for you to share a little bit about what you're currently up to. You're doing an incredible project right now. So I'm hoping you can share a little bit about that, and then we can get into the backstory about what got you to where you are today.
Sure. So I'm more than halfway through, I hope, a 25-year project to document every species in captivity around the world, for a project called the Photo Ark. We not only document these species photographically, sometimes we do video, and we do them all as studio style portraits on black and white backgrounds using studio lighting. So I've been to 700 zoos and aquariums and wildlife rehabbers and private breeders around the world. And we have about 13,000 species to show for that now over the past 16 years. The reason that we use the black and white backgrounds is it's a great equalizer. It makes that, you know, it gives all animals an equal voice, whether it's a mouse or an elephant or a tiger beetle or a tiger. They're all the same size and they all have equal value. And we can tell their stories very well that way, because there's no size comparison. There's no distractions on these backgrounds. So we can look these animals in the eye and really see them and understand that there's intelligence there, that they're very worth saving.
Amazing. And so how did you end up getting paired up with National Geographic? Like, how did that come your way?
Well, I'd always wanted to work for them since I was a little kid. And my parents always told me I could do whatever I wanted, and I believed them. So I worked as a newspaper photographer for 6 years in Wichita. Met a traveling National Geographic magazine photographer named James Stanfeld, who gave me a recommendation to send my work in, and that was in the late 1980s. I've been working for them as a contractor ever since. And
amazing.
That means, yeah, more than 30 stories in the magazine, all in the field, and then a bunch more stories once I started Photo Ark. And yeah, I'm pretty busy all the time. In fact, today I'm at the Duluth Aquarium speaking to you from a conference room at the Duluth Aquarium. And as soon as we're done with this, we're going to do beluga sturgeon to teach people about this very rare animal that's been exploited for caviar over the years and is in bad shape in the wild. So yeah, just keep going. Last week I was in Canada doing a star-nosed mole with a researcher and stone sheep at the Assiniboine Zoo in Winnipeg. And next week I'll fly to Austria and Czechia to do more birds, mammals, fish, reptiles, and amphibians and invertebrates.
That's incredible. Okay, so it sounds like you're constantly on the move. Are you traveling like regularly, or do you take time off in between? Or are you pretty much on the go the majority of the time?
Well, I research a day or so for every day of shooting easily. And then there's another day of editing for every day of shooting. So by editing, I mean, I choose the pictures that and video that we want to put out to the world. And then my staff goes to work in terms of cleaning up pictures. We put these animals on black and white backgrounds, but we'll use Photoshop to spot out dirt or poop or whatever. Make sure the specs on the cameras are out of there, the lighting system. But in terms of working, I work on this project every day of the year, every day. I mean, I'm not bothering people at Christmas, but I'm for sure doing email and catching up on email and just trying to stay on top of it, because I produce these shoots and it's a lot of work, just a lot of work, you know?
Wow. Well, what an incredible mission. And I remember as a kid, you know, my parents had National Geographics in the basement. We had a big bookshelf and they were all filled with them. And I would just look through them and I was so fascinated about all these different places and all these different animals. And it's so amazing what you're doing, being able to capture that and then share it with the world and inspire others to help protect these animals. So I would love to talk a little bit about some of the adventures that you've had, and what are some of the more memorable adventures that you've had on your journey as an explorer, hoping you might be able to share a couple unique stories.
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, for the first 17 years of my career, I just did stories in the field, just, you know, wildlife in the field and some human interest stories. And, you know, you get charged by various big, everybody wants to know, well, have you ever come close to getting killed on assignment? Well, I guess so, but it was all my fault. I mean, most of the time, charged by grizzly bears and polar bears and elephants and all those things, you know, but that's because I was trying to get too close and get really great pictures, but the animals don't care who you're working for, it turns out. But the reality of it is that very few people get killed by these animals, but we do get very sick and killed by diseases. And I know it's not as interesting as getting gored by an elephant, which I never have. But, you know, I've been exposed to the Marburg virus, where I had quarantine for 3 weeks. It's just like Ebola. I didn't get it, but I got a hot poop in my eye from a bat cave in Uganda, that in a cave where they had Marburg virus, and so I had to medevac home and wait around for 3 weeks to see if I was going to die.
Wow.
Well, what else? I've gotten mucocutaneous leishmaniasis, which is a flesh-eating parasite from the bite of a sandfly in the Bolivian Amazon. And that, I've been treated for that twice. And that requires a PICC line into the top chamber of your heart and a 1 hour heavy metal IV per day for a month to net back. I've had that treatment twice. That's not very fun. It's like chemo.
Wow.
Just, you know, like screw worms, bot flies and dysentery and, you know, people pointing guns at you and people throwing rocks at you. And just, oh, I know one that had with photo arc, which started 16 years ago. Now, this is more to my liking. I mean, zoos close at 5. So it means that I can go have dinner somewhere and like shower. It's fantastic. I did go to a zoo in February that had a big outdoor enclosure for breeding rare birds, rare prairie birds. And I did not get the memo that the wire on the gate, there was one wire on the gate and I didn't see it. It was kind of snowy and cold and windy. I didn't notice that wire was on insulators, meaning it was an electrified wire. It was a 6,000 volt wire that I touched, and it just kind of, but it was low amps, so it didn't kill me, but it just kind of blew me back. And I was kind of stunned and didn't feel very good. I thought, I wonder if that screwed up my heart rhythm or something. And I went into the unheated shed where we were working, and my son was there, and he asked what was going on. I told him, and he said, maybe you should sit down. I said, I think I'd feel better if I just kept going. So I set up the chute, but I set everything up backwards. I set my tent back, my little shooting tent backwards, and I set my background there backwards. You see all the duct tape holding them together. And he said, I think that you're not right yet. You should just go sit down. So I went and sat down, and 10 minutes later, everything was normal again. But it's always an adventure, but it's mostly the little stuff that gets you. Well, it's the bugs, you know, the insect-borne disease that we worry about.
So. Wow. All of the things you've gone through to kind of capture these moments and share them with the world. Well, I'm really thankful that you've made it through all of that and you're able to kind of share those stories with us today. I'm hoping you can talk a little bit too about some of your favorite animals that you've been able to photograph. And I don't know if you can even start because you've photographed so many of them, but I'm hoping you might be able to just share some of the top ones that stand out as far as your favorite experiences for animals you've been able to photograph.
Sure. Well, they're memorable. I guess they're not my favorite because the ones that are most memorable are the ones that are down to just one animal left.
Oh, okay.
Or a couple, and you don't know whether they're going to make it or not. I always tell people my favorite is the next one. And it has to be because I'm very excited about getting the next thing, whether it's an insect or whether it's a bird or whether it's the beluga sturgeon today. You know, it's like everything is kind of, everything's got to be near and dear to my heart. So I do the best job I can. But in terms of the ones that are super memorable, it's got to be animals like the very last Rabs fringe-limbed tree frog. This is a frog about the size of a baseball, a little smaller, that was down the very last one, an old male named Tuffy, because he outlived all life expectancy. And he was just in this little terrarium at the Atlanta Botanical Gardens out in a trailer that they call the frog pod out in the back parking lot where they had all these super rare amphibians. And he, you know, he's the very last one. And so I filmed him a couple times and did a little bit of video, and he's gone now. But in the 13 years, you know, in the, let's see, the 6 years, time gets away from me, the 16 years I've been doing this, I meet at least one or two animals a year that are down to nothing, just down to this one. And, you know, when I photograph them, I just think, will I remember this well enough to be able to tell people like you? Will I be able to relay their stories in a way that does them justice? I always come back to the fact that when I come face to face with some bird that's gone or a reptile or whatever it is, I think this is really going to affect humanity. This is going to have catastrophic consequences for us because this animal is dependent on, let's say it's a freshwater fish or a mussel. This animal has to have clean water, as do we. And its extinction means the water is so polluted, they can't live in it anymore. And so when we save these other species, we're actually saving ourselves. And if we want to go ahead and doom half of all creatures to extinction in the next 30 years, which is, you know, rough predictions, it comes at risk to us. I mean, it's folly to think that we can doom half of everything to extinction, but think that we're just fine. I don't think it's going to work that way. It's going to be a very impoverished world. It's also going to be a tougher world to live in if everything's really dirty and hot, which is where we're headed towards. Everything's really filthy and hot.
Wow.
And it's not a plan to just think, oh, I'll be dead by then. That's not a plan. That is not a good option. I'm very hopeful. I'm very hopeful. I don't get morose or depressed or anything. I just think, man, if I can tell this species story well enough through the photo arc, we of course would never doom anything else to extinction. We of course wouldn't. It's just a matter of getting the word out. So I'm very grateful to be here today telling this story and to just to let people know that there's so much out there still. Most of the species I photograph can be saved. But it's really going to take all of us kind of pushing and pulling together. We cannot be fighting with each other over politics and ideology while the world burns. It is really not going to work out. So I just do my thing. We're not a political project. We're here just to show beautiful animals and tell about them, just tell their story.
Wow.
And in a way, you know, I do this work and I'll do it till I'm in my 70s and then I'll be done. And then what the world does with it is not really my business. I hope they want to use it and keep, you know, keep these species close to heart, realize that their fate is our own. But I don't know. I don't know. My job is just to get the project done while I have time.
Well, Jill, you're doing an amazing job. And I think being able to see these animals and the way you're photographing them and to learn about them it makes people feel and feel that connection and feel that desire and inspires taking action to create positive change to help preserve these species. So Joel, what can people do to take action to start to create positive change to help protect these animals?
That's a great question. And it's one I think about all the time. You know, the bottom line is when we save these other species, we're saving ourselves in the process. And that's because we need clean water. We need clean air. We need arable land, and we need a stable climate to grow our crops. So it's super important that people realize that the time is to help save other species. And that's what the photo arc's all about.
Joel, what would you suggest? Where could people start?
Yes. So a lot of people want to know what they can do. And that's a big question. These are big problems, right? Well, start in your own backyard. This is an easy one to do. It's very fun. Quit pouring poison on your lawn to kill insects, to kill vegetation other than grass. Keep your yard organic in that sense. And plant native plants that can help pollinating insects, nectar-bearing plants, milkweed for monarchs. Plant appropriate things, native plants that bear nectar and help all the insects around us, because they're the base of the chain. That's a big one. Just start in your own backyard. And then start with your home. Your home insulated. There's a great way to make money right there. Insulate your home so you're not throwing carbon into the air unnecessarily. Watch what you buy. What do you purchase? What's, you know, the power of your purse or your wallet cannot be underestimated. That drives everything, consumer power. So think about the car you drive, the furniture you buy. What kind of foods do you eat? If you eat a ton of meat, maybe cut back on that some. Meat's very intensive in terms of its use of chemicals and water and fossil fuels. There's all sorts of things you can do. Your choice is in the grocery store. Are you buying something that's made out of palm oil that wasn't produced sustainably? Well, that's accelerating the demise of the Asian rainforest. It takes a little bit of effort, a little homework, but that's okay. The other thing you can do that's just a direct feel-good thing is to become a member of your local good zoo or aquarium. Like I'm at the Great Lakes Aquarium today, working on rare fish, and you know, they deserve our support. Most zoos and aquariums that are accredited facilities, like the kind where I work, they are involved with propagation and education, propagation of rare species, education of every school kid and family group that comes through. They learn, what can I do? What am I doing that hurts these species? What can I do that help? So if you have an infusion of time or money, if you inject that in a great zoo, an accredited zoo or aquarium, you could not do any better than, in my opinion. Really, the educational component is just so huge. Forget about adaptive breeding for the moment. You have school group after school group coming through a zoo, and they're urban kids, and the zoo is the only place where these kids will ever see and smell, sometimes actually get to touch a wild animal, like an educational snake, a harmless snake or a turtle. This is a big deal. Because when nature only exists on the face of a smartphone, and it's just this quaint notion, because kids aren't engaged in it, they've never played in a stream outside or a pond or anything, we're going to lose the game. So we have to keep kids engaged and realizing that animals are incredible, and they're good for us too. They're really good to keep around.
That's so incredibly important. I know I talk with my kids about trying to do our part, and I love going to national parks and exploring and learning, and it gets them excited about it. And sometimes I feel like they even know more than I do, because they're talking about this in schools and they're being taught all these things that I haven't even learned as an adult. So I love that you are a part of that, and you're encouraging kids and families to go and support these establishments that are doing all these great things.
Thanks. It's pretty important.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I would love to hear a little bit about what you think are the biggest species on the top of your list right now for preservation. And I'm sure that there's a big list, unfortunately, but are there any that stand out to you?
Sure. Well, it really, if you back up, it's all about habitat. It's all about what habitats can we save that would save the most number of species. So we choose these big flagship animals to help save the forests of India. Maybe you'd choose a tiger. You know, maybe you choose a tiger from India to save the oceans. Maybe you would choose hammerhead shark or blue shark to try to preserve some places where we don't strain all the fish out of the sea to eat. To save the high Arctic, you'd choose walrus or polar bear. Usually people choose some big charismatic animal in terms of wanting rainforest. You could choose Bornean rhino or orangutan from Borneo if you wanted to try to see those forests saved. And within those forests, within those oceans, you have thousands and thousands of other species that need the exact same habitat to survive. And so that's really kind of a key thing is for us doing the photo arc is to really make sure that we get all those charismatic species. Then we can tell the story of what's needed. And that is to quit cutting down all the trees, to quit straining the ocean of fish, to quit throwing so much carbon into the air that the ocean's acidifying, it kills all the coral, which act as nurseries for baby fish and everything else. That's, these are big problems that didn't just happen overnight. It's going to take a while to fix, but it starts with a podcast like this where somebody listens and learns, or it starts with people going to National Geographic and learning about the world and all that's in it, keeping an open mind. It's not political. It is just what it is. Mm-hmm. Nature is being reduced by people speaking out everywhere and converting most of the arable land to cropland. So we really do need to have some spaces that are left wild, leave them alone. And the thing that's super important to remember is that the rainforests around the equator not only cool our planet and provide us with oxygen, but they regulate rainfall. And that is really important because we have to have rains in the right amounts at the right time of year in the, on the right soils to grow our crops. Most crops are not irrigated around the world. And so if we break the rainfall patterns that we're used to, I mean, millions of people are going to starve to death. That's pretty harsh, but it's the reality of it. So it's very important that we get a handle on climate change and limit the damage that's going to do. And really saving the rainforest is a huge first step. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So Joel, at this point, you know, we are coming closer to the end of the episode where I would love to have you share any last words you want to share with the audience about your project? And then also, how can people learn more? How can people support this? And I am going to be putting links to your work, your social media, in the episode details. So people will be able to find it there. But, you know, anything else you want to share about that?
Yeah, I would say, you know, one of the great prophets on the face of the earth is National Geographic Society. They grant fund the photo arc. And they're seeing to it that we can have a foundation long-term as well to make sure the work's available to the public in perpetuity. Huge National Geographic fan, and I'm not told to say that. I just am. I've been with them for more than 30 years now, and they're fantastic. The other thing people can do to support PhotoArc is to just look at it and share it with their friends. They can go to photoarc.org. They can go to joelsartori.com. There's lots of places. If they type in photo arc, kind of like Noah's Ark, up it'll come on Google. Find your favorite animal, learn about it, share it with other people, get people excited, and realize that we all can make a big difference. And you know, that's the key thing, really, Crystal, is for people to not think about all the world troubles, but really start at home and think, what can I do? I would urge people to just do something, anything. Maybe they're really into dog and cats. Well, they could work at a local animal shelter. Maybe people care about food insecurity. They could work at a food bank. There's so many different issues people can take up. I would just want to leave people with the fact that if you lead a life of service, it's really the way to go. It feels so good, and it makes you realize, you know, kind of at the end of your days, hopefully, your declining hours, that the person you see in the mirror has the good, noble, productive life and has made the world less miserable and more joyful because of it. So I would just say to people, go out and get pick you love and stick with it. Become an expert. Dig in. It would be a satisfying way to live.
I love it, Joel. Well, this has been such an inspiring, empowering conversation. Before we close, I have a couple kind of fun closing questions for you. And one of them is, what is an animal that you personally feel really connected to? Is there a certain animal that stands out that you feel like you really relate to?
Oh, she's passed away. It was a animal named Nabire at the Dvořilové Zoo in the Czech Republic. At the time I photographed her, her kind, the northern white rhino, was down to 5 individuals. And she was just this old gal, and her keeper had raised her from a baby and brought her in using a kind of a trail of green leafy browse to get her into our little studio lined with black. And she's passed away now, and the world has 2 left, a mother and daughter in a pen in Kenya, and that's it. But places like San Diego Zoo, San Diego Safari Park, they're working with Surtma. They have some embryos. They're working with the southern right one rhino, which is very similar. And so there's hope there. So not only was Nibiru a very moving shoot for me, just in terms of seeing a magnificent animal that was very sweet, that has since passed away, but that there's hope for rebirth there. Not all these extinction stories go that way, but this one could have a happy ending if they can figure out how to do captive breeding on them successfully. So I'm always hopeful. I'm always hopeful, but that was a very special shoot.
Amazing. And Joel, the last question that I have for you is, knowing what you know now, what advice would you have given to yourself from 10 years ago?
That's a great question. I would say start the project in your 20s, man, as soon as you learn how to hold a camera, because there are so many species that have been dropped from zoos. They're just, you can't get from the wild anymore. There's so many animals that would be in the photo arc now if I'd started earlier, but I really didn't come to the photo arc until my early 40s after a big career with the magazine shooting in the field. I basically had the realization that most of the rare animals are small and nobody's doing stories on them. And the mice, the sparrows, the toads, the salamanders. So that's what I needed to really concentrate on. And black and white backgrounds, clips, that was the way to photograph them. So I would tell my younger self, hurry up. There's less time than you think, and start earlier. I wish I could go back 20 years, 25 years. Then it would be, I'd be a lot farther along.
Well, Joel, you're doing such incredible things. You're such an inspiration. And I can't thank you enough for taking some time today to share all of this. So thank you so much for being my guest today.
You are welcome. Thank you.
And best wishes with your project. Everyone listening, check out Joel's content, check out his photo arc, check out the National Geographic. And as Joel said, start at home, start today. You can make a positive, powerful impact. All right. Thanks, Joel. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I absolutely loved sharing these insights with you. If you have a moment, I would greatly appreciate you leaving a review about what you loved about this episode. Leaving reviews helps this show gain visibility so those who can benefit from it can gain access to it. Thank you so much for your support. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Now for a disclaimer, the contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only. Always seek the guidance of your physician or qualified health professional for any recommendations specific to you or for any questions regarding your specific health, your sleep patterns, changes to diet and exercise, or any medical conditions. Always consult your physician before taking any medications, any over-the-counter drugs, any supplements, vitamins, or herbs, and consult your physician before starting any new lifestyle programs. All information, views, and statements shared on the Live Greatly podcast are purely the opinions of the authors. They are not medical advice or treatment recommendations. They have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Opinions of guests are their own, and Crystal Bauer and this podcast do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. Neither Crystal Bauer nor this podcast takes any responsibility for possible health consequences of a person or persons following the information in this educational content. Always consult your physician for recommendations specific to you. If any product mentioned in this podcast has been received from the manufacturer or public relations team for that product with the express intent of editorial consideration, the product will be identified as such. A product for which Live Greatly receives some form of compensation for promoting will be identified as such.